The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A warmer from Evo! Welcome to Lovey Las Vegas for Ghost Cousins with myself, Greg Eames Peterson, now part of the Beast and Family podcast. We've got a tremendous podcast for you guys. We saw a lot in college basketball on Monday. We have a nice little about 32, 33 or so minute roundup of the news and notes of that in the final segment. So I'm going to be keeping this first segment a little bit more short, but we're going to be having on in segment number two one of our good buddies over there at HXCBB, and that would be Eli Becker. He is the founder of that great organization. He, much like myself, out here in the Midwest, I know that he's based out in the state of Washington, so need to get his thoughts on some of the marquee teams and what they've been able to do this offseason. We're going to be asking about Gonzaga. I'm also going to be diving into a topic that I think is interesting, because Oregon has really been one of the pioneers of the transfer portal. Feels like they've fallen a little bit further behind. They picked up Devin Cambridge. They also got, over the weekend, Kerry Okwundo. I'm going to get his thoughts on those additions, why it is that Oregon just has not been able to strike gold with these guys in the transfer portal like they were in past seasons. And something else that's been a little bit of a theme that I have noticed with the transfer portal is some of these boom or bust guys, these former five-star recruits, these guys that they came into college with a lot of fanfare, they didn't necessarily see a lot of minutes, and now they're moving on. So that is going to be a big theme of what we're going to be talking about today on the podcast, how to be able to evaluate these guys, trying to gauge the fit itself as well, because something else that's coming up, we saw a few days ago, Harrison Ingram, he decided to go from Stanford to North Carolina. How much of the struggles of Harrison Ingram are on Harrison Ingram? How much should be on Jared S. as well? How much of it is the fit? So we've got a lot that we're going to be diving into on the show today. And if you ever do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, @GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're up a fire and whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Wish I had more for you guys in these first segments, so I do need a few questions from you guys, anything that you want me to answer, more than happy to do so. And we've got a long offseason here, we've got 6+ months until we're going to be getting college basketball actual games into our lives, but until we're able to get into some of these conference previews, which I'm thinking late May, early June, we should be able to do so relatively safely without a bunch of movement. Typically, I go low to mid-major schools first, just because they typically have fewer moving parts than, say, the Big Ten, the Big 12, what have you, but once I'm able to do so safely, I will do so. But until then, we're going to have a lot of short first segments and then a lot of meat after it, like today. As joining me next, we do have Eli Becker to dive into a lot of topics. He does amazing work over at HXCBB, and he's coming up on the flip side right here on Coast to Coast with myself, Greg Eames Peterson, now a part of the Beast Family Podcast.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
Las Vegas for Jessica Soups with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. It is great to be joined by this man, as Eli Becker. He is the founder and main operator over at HXCBB, just a tremendous resource for those that love college basketball. I know that they've actually been ramping things up for women's college basketball as well. If you're looking for a little bit more insights on that front, HXCBB, they're starting to get things all going on that, and they've been able to do a tremendous job of rolling that out as well. But with Eli, he does a great job of covering this game that we love of college basketball all 12 months out of the year. He, much like myself, based out here on the West Coast, and you're able to follow him on Twitter at his last name, Becker underscore Eli. Last name is spelled B-O-E-T-T-G-E-R underscore, and then Eli. And my friend, it's always great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Absolutely, Greg. Always a pleasure to hop on and talk college hoops. I'm looking forward to this.
I am as well. And Eli, we have seen a lot of moves made over the last, we're going to call it 72 hours as we jump on this podcast. We saw Gonzaga obviously make those big moves on Friday, being able to get Graham EK, being able to get Ryan Nemhard. I do think that that's of impact. But in terms of the teams that have been able to make these splashy moves,
Which teams are you a little bit more bullish slash bearish on? Because I also really like what West Virginia's been able to do. They're a team that really stands out to me. What about a few teams that you've either been impressed by slash not impressed by with regards to their off seasons?
That's an interesting one. Obviously, you have to touch on Gonzaga and the way that Mark Few, again, as always, is able to navigate the transfer portal, getting both Ryan Nemhart and Graham Ike. And even before that, when Steele Venter is a player who I really liked quite a bit from Eastern Washington, who's had a really productive career over there, it's probably not going to be a Gonzaga team that has the type of top five preseason prognostication entering the season as we've grown accustomed to. But this should be a really solid team, and a lot of it comes down to some of these decisions of maybe whether or not Malachi Smith returns, even Nolan Hickman to some extent. But it's a team with a lot of potential. Obviously, we'll see where Graham Ike is as far as his health. Ryan Nemhart, I feel like he should be able to translate just fine over into Gonzaga's system. So they're a team that I have quite a bit of respect for of what they've done so far on the transfer portal. I think over in the SEC, you have to take a look at probably teams like LSU and Arkansas. And those are kind of two programs that have been really stout in the portal of late. I like what LSU has done. They brought in Jalen Cook from Tulane, who's a massively productive player over there, and welcoming him back into the rotation is kind of fascinating. Will Baker, Nevada transfer, great stretch, 7-footer who can hit from the outside. He's a great fit. Also, Carlos Stewart from Santa Clara. He's a combo guard who's been very productive. LSU started off really hot last year. That one kind of went sideways, but this is a good starting base for them. And then I'll even talk a little bit about Arkansas as well with what Eric Musselman has done. It's going to be fascinating to see how this rotation comes into form. I don't necessarily know how this is going to work quite yet. The Ellis addition is kind of confusing to me, coming over from a 4-win Louisville team, especially when Devontae Davis is on the team. He's been kind of an inconsistent shooter. But I love Tremont Mark. I think he's a fabulous player. And same can be said for Cleef Battle when he is healthy, which hasn't always been the case, but it was this past year with Temple. He can be a very productive player as well. So I'm fascinated with what Arkansas looks like. They also brought in Jeremiah Davenport and Keon Manyfield from University of Washington, which obviously I know quite a bit about him, given that he's in my neck of the woods. Plenty of positive thoughts on him and what he's able to do in an Arkansas uniform. So that's a fascinating one. I think one other team that probably needs to be discussed, whether some people might be super high on them, some people might not have very good things to say, but it's a fascinating team nonetheless, is North Carolina. They've so far brought in Harrison Ingram from Stanford. They also have Cormac Ryan and Paxton Wojcik, and Jalen Withers coming over from the Louisville squad. Again, I don't know if I see this as a team that is probably going to be ranked, I'd imagine, top 15 entering the year, at least as it stands right now, with RJ Davis and Armando Bacot coming back. But Harrison Ingram has, just plain and simple, he's been an underwhelming prospect to me. He seems to disappear quite a bit. I know that his skill set is probably more as like a slashing passer more so than a scorer, and maybe that's kind of the right fit for him to be at North Carolina, where he can distribute quite a bit out of that sort of role. But man, he's had some quiet performances. I've seen him play out in the Pac-12 and has underwhelmed so far in his Stanford career. And obviously, he gets a much better supporting cast around him now being at North Carolina, but I think there has to be some questions there. Paxton Wojcik, how well can he translate his production to the ACC coming over from Brown in the Ivy League, which has pretty much been the punching bag of the Ivy League for a handful of seasons now? I'm kind of curious how that one works. And then you welcome in Cormac Ryan, who was kind of a combo sort of role player with Notre Dame, who I like quite a bit in conference transfer, but ultimately how well does this all translate into one final piece? And Jalen Withers, I don't really know what kind of production he's going to see or the playing time that he will have with North Carolina. Obviously, he has quite a bit of familiarity playing 3 seasons within the conference, but I don't know. It's a team that could wind up being pretty darn good with Davis and Bacot running the show, and maybe the change of scenery helps Ingram kind of find that 5-star toolbox that he entered college with, but it could also be a team that probably underwhelms quite a bit. So the overall swing and miss of this North Carolina team, if you even want to put it at that, I think the swing and miss rate could be fairly high, but I feel like the hit rate could also be pretty high. So we'll see what happens with North Carolina, but there are a ton of teams that have assembled fascinating transfer cast so far.
And I think that North Carolina is really a good example of what the transfer portal is this season, as Eli Becker does great work over at HXCBB, is joining me on the podcast. there could be a lot of hit or miss, because I know that you were talking about Harrison Ingram, and I'm right there with you. I expected so much more from him when he came into Stanford, but the more that I've looked at him, the more that I think that just Jared Haas had no idea what he was doing with them, and the more that I take a look at it, and the more I actually feel a little bit bad for Harrison Ingram that he was playing in that system. So I'm willing to give him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt, but I do feel like the theme of this year's transfer portal is a lot of these guys that they just couldn't necessarily find that right fit. They just weren't necessarily in the right scenario, and there's a lot of teams that are sort of gambling on these former 4, 5, 3.5-star guys, hoping that they have that fit that they were looking for the first time around.
I think that's a really good way to put it, because in large part, if you are a high major program, you're either looking at other high major transfers who entered as highly rated prospects where maybe a change of system, maybe a change of scenery, or a better supporting cast allows those players to tap into their talents. Or typically the other avenue here to take is a highly productive mid-major or low-major transfer. It really is one of the two for a high major team, and it gets different the further down the list you go to more of the A-10s and the Mountain West of the world, but that's kind of what the transfer classes look like nowadays, is either you're trying to get a high major guy to come play for your program knowing that he already knows the level of play, or you try to see if you can get one of these mid-major guys to hit, which we saw plenty this past season. There are a ton of mid-major studs. I looked at Sule Boom, the way that he was able to perform going over to Xavier, and the way that he was able to just steer that ship. And Tyler Collette going from George Mason to Marquette, he did an excellent job. Same has to be said for Marquise Noel for Kansas State. Maybe not on the same exact stature, but we had Darion Trammell lead San Diego State to the national championship game. So, but it doesn't always end up that way. There are plenty of guys who just don't quite translate to the different levels the way that we would anticipate. And sometimes the surefire prospects maybe don't pan out that way. And I just remember pretty vividly of the North Carolina team of, I want to say, 2019-2020. It had some highly rated guys, and they also had a bunch of mid-major transfers, and that ended up being one of the worst North Carolina teams that we've seen. So honestly, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to coaching, and that's cliche, but the best coaches are going to make this work regardless of what their personnel looks like. And sometimes it's going to hit. Missouri last year, I was shocked at the job that Dennis Gates did with all of these mid-major up transfers, but he made it work, and credit to him. Again, if you want to talk about another team that's hitting on the transfer portal, Missouri and Dennis Gates is once again being very, very active. So the coaches that have had success with the transfer portal, I think those are the teams that you probably want to look at the most and at least lean into that, because I do think there is a secret sauce in making this all work. Some coaches have it and some coaches just don't.
And a team that has been very successful in the transfer portal in past years, but I have a little bit of question this year, is Oregon. As joining me on the podcast, we do have Eli Becker of HXCBB. And Eli, I still remember back when you were at a different website. I remember you had posted up like coaches and their success rate in the transfer portal. Eric Musselman, Dana Altman was one of the top ones from a few years ago, but I take a look at Oregon and they added a few guys over the last 7 days, Zachary Okwundo and Devin Cambridge, but I've got my question marks as to how they're going to be able to fit in. They've lost one of the guys that they brought in the transfer portal in recent years in Quincy Guerrier. How are you gauging the Oregon program in terms of what they've done this offseason and just the last few years in general? Because they're really one of the godfathers of the transfer portal, but I feel like Dana Altman just has not been able to find his touch in the transfer portal in recent years. I do have my question marks as to how Okwundo is going to be able to play in the Pac-12.
I think that's fair. Oregon, typically, as you touched on, is typically one of the monsters of the transfer portal, and we saw that most of the first half of Dana Altman's tenure at Oregon, and he was consistently taking this team to the second weekend. He did it in 2013. He had a Final Four and Elite Eight in 2016 and 2017, and then a pair of Sweet 16s in 2019 and 2021. So he's been there and he's done that, but the last handful of seasons, Oregon hasn't necessarily been on the same echelon or the same level that we're accustomed to with Dana Altman. And I don't really know if the talent level has been to what we're used to seeing from Oregon. And people might say that, yeah, they've still had great recruits there. They had Khalil Ware there this past season, but they were getting a lot of really talented players who were either JUCO transfers or mid-major all-stars who were coming over, and just isn't really to the level of, say, a Devin Cambridge, who has had a fine career. He's been at the high major level throughout his career. He was solid this past season at Arizona State. I'd probably define it as that. He had some good moments. He had some head-scratching games, kind of did the same thing at Auburn. That's one of their probably top three options on offense this upcoming season, if I had to guess. I just don't know if that's going to keep up. This team's going to rely probably pretty heavily on their star-studded freshmen. They have three really good freshmen coming in, Kwame Evans, Mookie Cook, and Jackson Shellstead, who have heard a lot of good things about. It's a team that kind of strikes me as another Oregon team of late that's almost certainly going to hit 20 wins, probably almost certainly going to find their way on the bubble at some point, but I don't really know how much further than that they can go. It's just kind of what you touched on. It's maybe not the team that has had the type of talent in recent years. Cario Oquendo, the same deal, coming over from pretty so-so Georgia team. I kind of like to see that the transfers are coming over from winning teams, and I don't know if that can really be said about some of these guys. So it's going to be a big year for Dana Altman, because you don't want to miss a tournament 3 years in a row. They really haven't had a season besides the 2020 cancel year where they were a team that was, you know, really consistently in the top four or top five of the seed. And you have to go all the way back to 2017 where this team was even better than a sixth seed. So it's a pivotal year. I probably imagine that Oregon wasn't expecting to have some of these guys depart like they would. Khalil Ware, I think most people thought he was probably going to the NBA instead of transferring. And same thing can be probably said for Quincy Guerrier. So that's the reality of it now. I think they need a little bit more shot making. I have some questions about the front court depth. I don't really know how if they have that much behind and probably Dante, or if really leaning fully into Kwame Evans to play that role. But we'll see what happens with this team. But right now, I'd probably peg it somewhere towards the bubble.
Yeah, with Oregon, I do think that they're a very fascinating team and a Pac-12, let's call it what it is, hasn't had the most success outside of UCLA and Arizona in recent years as well. And I do have to get your thoughts on this team as well, because you talked about Arkansas a little bit ago, and obviously they are masters of the transfer portal, but Alabama is as well. And they've made a few additions in recent days that I find to be interesting. Aaron Estrada over at Hofstra and Latrell Reitzel Jr., both of these guys were top scorers at their respective mid-major schools. Aaron Estrada over at Hofstra was Mr. Do-It-All. Latrell Reitzel was a walking bucket over there in the Big West. And by the way, just before we came on this podcast, we found out that Jaquan Walton got arrested. So he is no longer going to be in the fold for Alabama. So that frees up another player that they're able to look at. And hopefully that is not as bad of a situation as it looks like. So we shall see what happens there. Not necessarily what you want to be seeing. But that said, what do you make out of the two guys that Alabama gets in Estrada and Reitzel? Because I look at them as being nice cogs for the team, not necessarily guys who are going to be taking over, but I feel like that's what the transfer portal should be for, finding these guys are like number three, number four options, maybe some that comes in off the bench, and I think both of these guys fit the mold.
I like the additions. I think they fit what Alabama needs pretty well, which is oftentimes shot making, guys who could get up and down the floor and play pretty stout defensively. And it's a different world where you're hunting for maybe your number one go-to guy, superstar on offense. And I don't know if Alabama necessarily needs that type of guy this upcoming season. It's not going to be like this past year's team where most of the offense ran through Brandon Miller when he was hitting, and this was a very, very challenging team to beat, and they had a great supporting cast around him with some capable guys. I see this year's Alabama team maybe taking a bit more of a by-committee approach as far as scoring is concerned. They've got a really solid top five, top six to get the job done. Mark Sears is probably going to be back again, and he should be able to lead the point and be really good once again for this team, and I was impressed what he did transferring up from the MAC when he was with Ohio, and he had a really productive first season at Alabama. I like when these transfers spend multiple years at their new home, because I think it allows them to get a year of getting accustomed, getting acclimated to the conference and so on. I think that it really allows those players to blossom. But Sears and Estrada in the backcourt, that's a backcourt with a lot of offensive firepower. As long as this team stays largely intact, otherwise, Charles Bediako underneath, it's going to be one of the better defenders in the SEC. And then touched on Latrell Reitzel quite a bit, and I was able to watch him more as the Big West Conference progressed. And with Cal State Fullerton, he had some really, really nice games. He can score quite a bit. He can hit from the outside, which is something that he didn't really do a ton of his first couple years there. But this past season, he hit over 2 3-pointers a game at a 36% clip, and also did a pretty solid job on the defensive side and was a high usage guy. And so when you take a high usage guy from a smaller conference who was efficient, and you are able to kind of pin him more and maybe like a supporting role, I think his efficiency will only improve. So it's a really good addition. I like Alabama quite a bit this upcoming season. Maybe it doesn't have necessarily the ceiling as this past year's team did with Brandon Miller. And of course, if you take a top three pick off of a team, it's probably going to be a little bit worse the following season. But so far, it's been a solid offseason for Alabama. Of course, off-court issues aside, but this team should be pretty well poised to be in the top 25 again entering this upcoming season.
Yep, I don't think that Alabama is going to be quite that number one seed in the NCAA tournament like they were this past season, but I do think that Alabama has done a good job of being able to add quite a bit of depth. We shall see how their freshmen are going to be able to blossom, but a man that has blossomed before our eyes in recent seasons, because Eli, you've always been very good at being able to report on college basketball, but every single day, Heat Check CBB just continues to ascend more and more. You play such a big role in that. I mean, all you guys over there do absolutely tremendous work. I know that you guys are doing an incredible job of taking a look at the transfer portal. I know that you guys have big things ahead for previewing the upcoming college basketball season. So let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you. People can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, I really appreciate the kind words, Greg. Always working on our product and trying to get better at what we're doing. And you touched a little bit on the women's transfer stuff. We were really excited to have Talia Goodman join us a little bit over a week ago and drop a huge article on all of the women's transfers, which obviously after this past season, it's a game that's growing quite a bit, and love covering all sorts of college basketball. So we're excited about that blossoming as well. And as always, covering transfer portal, looking at the upcoming season, there are so many topics, and it's a 12-month sport these days. So there's always going to be news and things to talk about. And we're always happy to keep a pulse and keep our eyes on everything going on. So it's always a pleasure to hop on no matter what month and talk college hoops with you, Greg.
It's always great to be able to get Eli Becker aboard. Just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to looking at college basketball. A man that truly loves this sport. A man that works about as hard as anyone of taking a look at what we are all getting in terms of the transfer portal, in terms of the upcoming season. I know that they did a great job along the field of 68 with the Almanac last year. I'm sure that they're going to have big things ahead for previews, which obviously going to be coming in a little bit of due time because we've got a lot of hoopla in the transfer portal as of right now. But when things settle down, they're going to be prepared for it. And Eli plays such a big hand in everything that he checks CBB does. So big thanks, Eli, for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the BC Family Podcast. Coming next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you a roundup of the news and notes we saw in college basketball on Monday.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right, which is different than empathy, yeah, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Ghost Kisses with myself, Greg Apes Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family, a podcast. It is always a pleasure to get on. Our good friend Eli Becker over at HXCBB does an amazing job taking a look at college basketball. What he's built over there at HXCBB is absolutely tremendous, and every single time he joins this podcast, always offers tremendous insights. He is so tied in with this game. So big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you a little bit of a roundup as to all the news and notes we saw in college basketball on Monday. You really hate to lead with a story like this, but Jaquan Walton is no longer with Alabama. He was playing at Wichita State last season and transferred to Alabama. He was arrested Saturday with weed and multiple guns in his car. So he is currently no longer with Alabama. He was expected, in my opinion, to be more of a role guy for Alabama. I didn't think he was going to be a starter. 14 points, 5 boards, shot 40% from 3 this last season at Wichita State. Very highly touted junior college transfer. That still leaves you with Aaron Estrada, along with the other gentleman we were talking about with Eli Becker and Latrell Wright. So, very sad situation. Hopefully, it's not as bad as it seems, but that's not necessarily what you do want to be seeing. You just hope for the best for Mr. Jaquan Walton, and it opens up a spot for Alabama, so he is no longer going to be in the fold. I don't think that this is going to be anything earth-shattering for Alabama, but I do think that they are now going to be scouring the transfer portal a little bit more for someone to replace him. We did see quite a few mid-majors become big winners over the last 24 or so hours. I recognize that this is not necessarily a guy that lit the world on fire, but Philemon Gebrewicz, he was playing this last season at DePaul. He's heading on over to Northern Illinois, a Northern Illinois team that hasn't had a lot of talent in recent years. He was a guy that made 40 starts the last 2 years at DePaul. This last year, was able to give the team 5.8 points per contest, shot 37% from three-point range. He stays in state. He's going to Northern Illinois. This is a big-time get for a Northern Illinois team that I remember 2 years ago was one of the worst offensive teams in all of college basketball. I still don't think that they're going to be like the top team in the MAC or anything like that, and it still could be a relatively rough year, but it's signs of things trending in the right direction for them. It's something that was much needed. That's very nice to see. McNeese State, they need a little bit of a boost as well. Bringing in someone like a Shahada Wells is massive. Shahada Wells began his career at UT Arlington. Actually, if you want to go back a little bit further, at the junior college level for Tyler of Texas at UT Arlington for that 1 year, he averaged 17 points, 3.8 assists, was able to shoot 39% from three. Never really shot it well at TCU, shot a combined about 24.7% from three past two seasons, but he had some moments with the TCU team, was able to average nearly 2.5 assists, a steal, 6 points per contest. A school like McNeese being able to pick up Shahada Wells, that is massive for a bunch that they have not had anything in the backcourt in recent years. So a pair of low to mid majors really won out big over the last 24 hours with those two pickups. You saw Nels Lane, he was playing this last season over at Florida. He has decided that he is going to be going to Delaware. With Delaware, a little bit of a rebuild for this team as they do lose so many guys that were integral to their success in making the NCAA tournament 2 years ago, along with last year, Jameer Nelson Jr. being out of the fold hurt with Lane. He was a relatively touted guy in the class of 2020, just could never really get out there for Florida. His best year was during the 2021-22 season. Did see a few starts that season, was able to give the team right around 3 points per contest at 6'5". Not really much of a facilitator, not necessarily a great rebounder. We shall see what he's able to do in terms of his three-point shooting, but if you go back to when he was coming out of high school, he was a former top 150 guy, a top 10 player in the state of New Jersey for his class. So certainly the raw talent is there for Lane. We shall see if he's going to be able to put it together. Christian Turner down for what? He is going to be going from one Sunbelt school from his past year to another. He was playing over at Troy, and he goes from the men of Troy, and he is going to be heading on over to Texas State. For Turner down for what last season? He was able to do a solid job as a starter that was more of a defensive stopper. Only shot about 30% from three-point range, but gave the team 5.5 points, a steal, 3.5 rebounds per game. Nice little pest at 6'7" that was able to pull in there a few rebounds. He's not going to do anything magnificent, but he fits the Texas State style. Texas State, very much a defense-first team, not a team that really needs a lot of outside shooting or anything like that. So I do think that he's going to play a nice role for this team. Dusan Marosic, he was playing at NC State this last season, only played 10 games due to injury. And you take a look at it, last 2 years, he's been limited 23 games due to injury. And before getting hurt, he was putting up good numbers at NC State, 8.7 points, 6.6 boards per contest. Not a guy that's going to stretch a floor at 6'10", but a relatively good low post player. He is in the transfer portal. We shall see what happens with him. If he's able to stay healthy, I do think that he could be a little bit of a steal here on the transfer portal. Has been at many, many different schools. Began his career at Illinois State at the D1 level. Played for non-D1 Lewis. He was at Utah. He was at NC State. Now he's going to be going elsewhere. So, you know, for a clean bill of health for him, and he is in the transfer portal. Caden Shedrick, he announced on the Field of 68 very late Sunday night that he's going to be heading on over to Texas. For Shedrick, relatively solid shot blocker this last season over at Virginia, 1.5 blocks. Not a guy that's going to light it up in terms of scoring, 6.2 points, 3.8 rebounds per game, but especially with Dylan Dessou coming back, this is a Texas team that all of a sudden they've got a lot in the post. Now, for Caden Shedrick, there were some games in which he didn't necessarily have his best showing. I think that that's very fair to say. He held up his end of the bargain in that game against Furman, 15 points, 13 boards, 4 blocks in the NCAA tournament. And towards back half of the season, he was able to do a very solid job. From January 7th on, he was able to give the team right around 1.2 blocks per contest. There were times where he was really able to dominate. He took on more of a scoring role out of conference and conference. He's a little bit more of a defensive stopper, but him being a nice role player at Texas, that is a good gift for them. And if he's utilized as sort of a man coming in off the bench, giving you 15, 20 minutes, giving you a few shot blocks, I think that he's going to be able to do a good job with that role. Colorado State, they bring in a pair of guys I like. They bring in Nequay Clifford, who was playing at Colorado this last year, so he's not going to be moving too far away. And he was a starter for Colorado, being able to put up 6 points, 4 boards, shot from 3-point range, only about 29% from 3. 2 seasons ago at Colorado, more on 6.5 points, 4.5 boards on 40% 3-point shooting. He is a kid from Colorado Springs. For him going over to the Mountain West, I think that he should be able to put up some nice numbers. And Colorado in general last year just felt like a band of misfit parts, really, other than what you were able to get out of KJ Simpson along with Da Silva. You weren't able to get a whole heck of a lot out of anyone else, so I do think that Clifford is going to be able to find a nice fit, and he's going to be joined by Javonte Johnson, who transfers in from within the conference. He was playing in New Mexico this last season. He was a starter for New Mexico, but was a little bit more of a role player. Starter 2 seasons ago, 7.5 points, 4.5 boards, shot a blazing 45.5% from 3 this last year, shot more around 32% from 3. He's a career 35.5% 3-point shooter. I think that that's more of what you can expect this season, but he's another one of these 6'6", little bit of combo players. Doesn't necessarily do one thing great, but does a lot of things relatively solid and can be a little bit of a joker player. So Colorado State, they're looking for lots of versatility, and they have found that, in my opinion, in the transfer portal. And both kids, by the way, from Colorado Springs. Andre Severtsov, he was an all Sun Belt performer this last season at Georgia Southern, was able to be a very versatile 6'7" player that supplied the team with 14.5 points, 7.3 boards, 1.3 steals, shot about 36% from 3-point range. He's heading on over to Duquesne. Duquesne had some really good success being able to go bombs away from 3-point range. Duquesne didn't necessarily do one thing great, but they did a lot of things relatively solid. Severtsov, I think that he is a great fit for that program. You do need a little bit more rebounding, in my opinion. If you're Duquesne, you didn't necessarily have that one dominant post player, and Severtsov certainly is not going to be that, but I think that this is a very valuable pickup for them. This is a valuable add in the transfer portal as well. Tyron Lawrence, he has decided that he is going to be transferring away from Vanderbilt. I think that there should be a lot of guys that are knocking on his door. He was able to average about 13 points per contest this last year, a little bit over 4 rebounds per game. His 3-point shot was a bit hit or miss, shot 36% from 3, but was really able to find it towards back half of the season. From January 14th on, so final 20 games of the season, shot 40.6% from 3-point range, north of 78% at the charity stripe, registered 15.8 points, 5.3 boards, and a steal per contest. He was one of those guys that was really able to build himself up towards back half of the season. So we shall see who's able to land him. We saw Perry Smith Jr., who was playing this last season at Vermont, he decided that he is going to be going to NC Central, and we've seen NC Central be able to strike gold in the transfer portal. Not a guy that saw a lot of minutes this last year in Mr. Smith. He was able to average about 2 points per contest, is a native of the state of South Carolina, so he's going a little bit closer to home. You can tell that he probably just wasn't going to be seeing a lot of minutes for a Vermont team that they don't utilize their bench a ton. It's not like they're a team like, oh, I don't know, Syracuse, that one with 5 guys, and that's about it. But I do think that he is going to be able to get some minutes with NC Central, and I could see Lavelle Moten, who's just a tremendous coach, being able to utilize him very well. This is another guy that I think has quite a bit of upside that is in the transfer portal, Jonathan Lawrence. During the 2021 campaign when he was coming out of high school, a top 100 recruit that didn't necessarily have a big role with regards to this Memphis team. He was a little bit more of a defensive stopper. He did see right around 15 minutes per contest this last season, shot 41% from three, but only about 3.5 points per contest as a 6'6", a little bit of a versatile player. You tell that when he got minutes and when he got shots up, he was able to do a solid job with it. Was not necessarily a focal point of Memphis, as we know that would be Kendrick Davis, DeAndre Williams, and company. So he's looking for a little bit more of a role there. We shall see what the transfer portal holds for him, but certainly someone with a lot of talent. We're going to be fascinated to see what happens there. Derek Jones, he was playing over at Radford, just missed the entirety of the season last year. Made a start for Radford two seasons ago, but not necessarily too much of a contributor. 6'6" combo player that averaged about a point per contest two seasons ago. He is in the transfer portal. We're starting to see more and more of that. Marquise Kennedy, he was playing this last season over at Loyola of Chicago, and he has decided that he's going to be staying within the state, and he's heading to the UIC Flames, and this is a good get for UIC as Kennedy. He was the Missouri Valley Sixth Man of the Year during the 2019-20 campaign, and as we know with UIC, they're a team that they have made some adjustments as well. Loyola Chicago leaves the Missouri Valley Conference at UIC. They go into the Missouri Valley Conference, but I do think that this is a good gift for them as Kennedy, he's been a study Eddie guy. He spent four seasons at Loyola Chicago, never averaged more than 9.2 points per contest, never had fewer than 7.2 points per contest, never had less than a steal per contest, never had more than 1.2 steals per contest, averaged right around assist and a half per contest, career 32% three-point shooter. He's someone that can give this team some scoring. With UIC, they've been rudderless in their backcourt the last few seasons. Being able to pick someone up like Kennedy, he's not necessarily a guy that's going to go out there and be a creator. It's not someone that I think is going to be taking over point guard duties or anything like that, but someone that can create the way that he does. I feel good in reporting these when it comes to the St. Francis or Brooklyn guys. Tedrick Wilcox Jr., he was playing for them last season. He's found a home as he is going to be heading over to the old Pirates of Hampton. Wilcox was able to have a nice season last year over at St. Francis, put up a little bit over 11 points per contest, shot about 35.5% from three, shot 39% from three-point range the season before, was a really good contributor for St. Francis, two-year starter for them. Reason why you feel good about it is because St. Francis of Brooklyn, they completely disbanded their entire athletics department, not just their college basketball team, but literally anything involving athletics. It is now gone for St. Francis of Brooklyn, so all these guys are looking for a home, so, you know, for absolutely nothing but the best for these student-athletes, him going over to Hampton. That is big for Hampton as well, as Hampton, they really did not have a lot of depth this last season, and I think that they've actually done a relatively solid job in the transfer portal. They also get Joshua Lusane. He was playing over at Campbell this last season, a relatively solid rebounder for the team, so they have added two pieces in the transfer portal. I'm thinking that they're not quite done yet, so they've been able to do quite well for themselves in the transfer portal. You've got a pair of guys that are going to be going to Weber State as well. One guy was at the D1 level last season, and Arnaud Rivas. He was at Maryland, didn't really see a lot of minutes. He's a 6'10", a little bit more of a developmental guy that comes in from both Switzerland and France, so we're going to see what he's going to be able to provide. Someone that wasn't necessarily super highly touted, more of a project player for Maryland, so a bit of a jury's out situation there. And then we saw a D2 standout in Blaze Threat. That is a great name. He was playing at Colorado Mesa this last season. He is going to be heading on over to Weber State. Put up a really good number. Shot 45% from three, 18.9 points, nearly six rebounds per contest. Was able to do a nice job of being able to get quite a few steals as well as he was able to average a little bit over a steal and a half per contest. I think that he could be a guy that they could build around as well. For Weber State, they just really didn't have a lot of options last season, and them being able to have a little bit more to go around their cast, I think is very big, because last season, everything ran through Dylan Jones. If you're able to get a nice score like a Blaze Threat out there, that's big. If you're able to have the project coming in from Maryland be able to pan out as well, you know what? You could be having something with Weber State, and Weber State, they rebuild themselves up towards back half of the season. So future is looking relatively bright there. D. Barnes, he was playing at Southern Utah this last season. He decided that he is going to be entering in the transfer portal. We did see his coach in Todd Simon decide that is going to be going to Bowling Green, so perhaps that could be his next destination, as we've seen a lot of Southern Utah guys follow him over there. But this last season, averaged right around 6 points per contest, shot 43.8% from three-point range, so didn't necessarily put up a whole boatload of points, but was someone that was able to really shoot it well from three-point range, so we shall see what the future holds for him. Mohamed Diarra, he has decided that he is going to be heading on over to NC State. A little bit of a 6'10" combo player that was able to average 3.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game for Missouri. Just wasn't necessarily the world's greatest fit for him, because Missouri, they were very much playing fast. They were playing very guard-oriented with Diarra. He's 6'10", not a guy that really pops a lot of threes. Was a very highly touted guy coming out of the junior college ranks. Was a top 10 player according to JUCOrecruiting.com. So we shall see what he's going to be able to do at NC State. NC State, they needed a little bit more rebounding, losing Greg Gant, losing Dusan Barosic. I think that DJ Turner Burns is out of eligibility. So being able to add someone like this, I think, is going to be able to fortify them down low. CJ Frederick, I think, has found a nice landing spot as well. He was playing this last season at Kentucky, and he has decided that he is going to be going to Cincinnati. Just was never a fit at Kentucky. He missed the entirety of the 2021-22 season this last year. Averaged 6 points per contest, shot 32% from three. After 2 years at Iowa, he was a 46% three-point shooter, 8.8 points per game. I don't think he was fully ever truly recovered from his injuries as well. I think that he should be for this upcoming season, but you could tell that the Kentucky style was not necessary for him. I do think that Cincinnati is going to be suited for him. He is going to need to play a little bit more defense than he did when he was over at Iowa. There's no question about that, but I do think that with Cincinnati, the success that they have with guys like Landers Nolly this past season, it's going to be boding well for them. Donovan Totley, he is in the transfer portal. He was playing at Bethune-Cookman this last year. Well, he was at Bethune-Cookman and really didn't play. And last time we've really seen a lot from Totley, you have to go back to his 2020-21 season at Monmouth. This guy is taking a lot of years off. He's been very banged up. But if you go back to what he did at Chattanooga when he was a freshman, this is all the way back to the 2018-19 season. He looked like a real guy that would be able to contribute for a major college basketball program. As a freshman, 11.2 points, 3 assists per contest. And then when he was at Monmouth, he became a 40% three-point shooter. So I'm very interested to see what we get out of Totley, because I do think that there's quite a bit of upside. We just haven't seen a lot from him in recent years, as he just has not been able to stay out there on the floor. Greg Glenn III decided that he is going to be entering in the transfer portal. Really just did not see any minutes while he was over at Michigan. Someone that they were trying to be able to get a few, but he was a little bit more of a walk-on type. You figured that he wasn't going to be able to see a lot of playing time, and it looks like he is going to be seeking more minutes. So he decided that he is going to be entering into the transfer portal. Trey Benham, he was playing at Lipscomb this last season. He's opening up at Low Point, and he is going to be heading on over to High Point. With Benham, he was a solid contributor. Started 23 games this last season, a career 38.5% three-point shooter that registered this last year 6.6 points per contest. 2 seasons ago at Lipscomb, 8.5 points, 3.2 boards per game. So he's a solid contributor for High Point. I think that he's going to be able to meld well in that system. High Point is always one of those whole is greater than the sum of its parts sort of teams, and I think that he fits in very well as a guy that can give you right around like 10 or so points per game out in the Big South, be able to knock down a few threes, be sort of that number three option. I think that that is perfect for him. Jonathan Mogbo, he was playing this last season at Missouri State and had a nice year at Missouri State. Came in from the non-D1 level and he tore it up. 8 points, 7 boards, a block, a steal per contest. Not a guy that would go out there and shoot threes at 6'8", but he was able to do a lot of good things. He's going to be heading on over to San Francisco. Now, San Francisco plays a much more up-tempo style than Missouri State. Then again, most schools do, as Missouri State was one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. But for San Francisco, they have had their best success when they have been able to have some relatively consistent low post play. The versatility of someone like Mogbo, I think, will fit very well with San Francisco. So I like this on all fronts. I like this as well. DJ Turnitup Patrick, he has decided that he's going to be heading on over to Charleston Southern. 2 seasons ago at South Florida, was able to put up some okay numbers. Was able to give the team 4 points per contest. He was one of the more highly touted junior college transfers. Just really couldn't find his way with South Florida. And for Charleston Southern, it's been a rough last few seasons with them, but they were able to finally get a little bit of offense going this last season. I do think that someone like DJ Patrick is going to be able to help them out quite a bit. At 6'6", I don't expect him to be a guy that's going to go out there and necessarily light it up from three-point range or anything like that, but in a Big South that really likes a lot of size, I think that he could be a very solid big man. We saw Jonathan Abar. He was playing at North Florida this last season. He has decided that he is going to be going to Florida International, so he's going to be staying within the state. And he was an ace on all-freshman performer a few seasons ago during the 2020-21 season. That year, a little bit over 7 points, 1.2 blocks, 5 rebounds per contest. He's capable of shooting threes, a career about 28% three-point shooter, but this last year, shot 34.5% from three with about 8.5 points. He did see his rebounding drop a little bit more. He tried to become a little bit more versatile at 6'9" in Florida International. They do play a relatively up-tempo style in North Florida. They've always been a team that has not been shy to run it and gun it, so this is very much a style that fits what they are going to be looking to do. So I do think that this is going to be a nice fit for them. We saw Austin Nunez. He was playing at Arizona State this last season. He had taken a visit at Ole Miss a few days ago, and he has decided that he is going to be playing for Mr. Chris Beard over at Ole Miss. Going to be really interesting to see what Ole Miss does for this upcoming season. They have lost a few guys like Deshaun Ruffin and company, but bringing in a guy like Nunez, who didn't light the world on fire at Arizona State, but did shoot 37.5% from three in a little bit of a role player sort of slot. He was able to give the team 4.5 points per contest. He's a good defender, someone from the state of Texas. I do think that Chris Beard is going to be able to win at Ole Miss. I know that it's going to be a very interesting ordeal as to how the reception is going to be around Ole Miss. But if you're looking just on the floor, I do think that there's going to be quite a bit of success to be had. And I do think that Nunez is going to be a big part of it. Jonathan Massey, he has decided that he is heading from McNeese. And that's a big reason why it was even larger that they were able to get Chad Wilson. He has decided that he is going to be going to Longwood as well. So Longwood has been landing quite a few guys here recently, as they also added Suxby Sanderlin, who was playing over at East Carolina this last season. But being able to bring in Massey, I do think that this is going to be a big deal for him. An all-Southland performer that was able to start darn near every game this past season for McNeese State. Good, well-rounded player. 10.5 points, just under 3 assists, 1.3 steals per contest. Not a guy that's necessarily going to go out there, pop a lot of threes, but for a Longwood program where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts with them as well, being able to bring in a guy that checks darn near every box, I think that that is very big for them. This is big for Cal Poly as well, as Cal Poly, they were still relatively solid this last season. They lost a lot of games, but you could tell that they were relatively close. Perhaps this is going to be a piece that could push them over the top. Jared Heider, he was playing this last season at Cal. As a matter of fact, he was playing the last few years at Cal. He had to redshirt this last year due to injury, but he has decided that he is going to be going to Cal Poly. When he was at Cal during the 2020-21 season, put up about 5.5 points per contest in the Pac-12. His best success came when he was at Fresno State. During the 2019-20 season, right around 9 points, 3 assists per contest. He was able to do that out in the Mountain West. Has dealt with a lot of injuries, so him being able to stay out there on the floor is a big-time question mark, but I do think that there is quite a bit of upside, and for a program like Cal Poly, being able to land someone like him, that is a step in the right direction. I think that this is an interesting move in the transfer portal. Jalon Trent, he was playing in North Dakota this last season. He's decided that he is going to be entering into the transfer portal. Was a starter for this team that did a little bit of everything other than score, as he averages 6.5 points per contest, but 2.4 assists, 4.2 rebounds, was really the main facilitator for the team towards back half of the season. And as the year went along, he was gaining more and more confidence, and he was able to contribute in more and more ways, as he does stand 6'4", so he's got a relatively good frame there. But from the beginning of February on, final 9 games of the season, shot 46.7% from 3-point range, gave the team 6.5 boards, 9.5 points per contest. So I like the way that he was able to play towards back half of the season. I'm going to be very interested to see what team is going to be landing him, because I do think that they could pick up a really nice ancillary piece that I think would do a lot of good for a lot of programs. Sam Freeman, he was playing this last season at Pacific, really wasn't able to get out there on the floor. Spent his first 2 seasons at Minnesota, wasn't able to do anything there for Pacific. He was a part-time starter, but he was only playing about 11 minutes per contest. He gave the team 2.5 points, 2.5 rebounds per game. He is back in the transfer portal. Someone that I do think has quite a bit of ability, 6'10", 240-pound big man, but has just never really been able to find that good fit. So we shall see if he's going to be able to get that in the transfer portal this offseason. I feel like that's been a theme for a lot of these guys. Chandel Weaver, he was the WAC Rookie of the Year this last season. He was playing over at UT Arlington. Put up nice numbers, 9.5 points, 2 assists, 4.5 boards, shot 40% from three as a good versatile guard for this UT Arlington team. He is now in the transfer portal. I think that he is of very much intrigue, as I like the way that he was able to ascend. He was on a UT Arlington team that was one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball, so that did make his efficiency relatively solid. I do think that he can step in and he can contribute on a lot of different schools. So he is out there in the transfer portal. Long call Moore. Moore, you would like to see him play more games than he did last season because he only played in 13. He was rather injured, but and he was Georgia State's top offensive player this last year. 14 points, 2.2 steals, 4.5 boards, shot 35.5% from three. For a Georgia State team that was absolutely terrible from the outside, I'm very intrigued to see what team is going to be landing him because I do think that with Moore, there's a little bit of a gem here in the limited minutes that he was able to play. He looked very good with his offense. So that is going to be of intrigue. Quinn Berger, he was a bit of a walk-on at St. Joe's. He has decided that he is going to be going to Bucknell. He averages many points as myself and for Bucknell. They did lose Nate Davis in the offseason. John Griffin, former Bucknell great, takes over the program. Looks like he's got quite a bit of a rebuild, but we shall see what they're going to be able to do there. Quincy Guerrier, he was playing at Oregon this last season, and he has decided that he is moving over to Illinois. For Illinois, they like these versatile big men like a Matthew Meyer, and I do think that he could be sort of this year's Matthew Meyer, not quite as productive as this last year at Oregon. He put up 9 points per contest, 4.5 boards, shot 35% from three. His best success came during the 2020-21 season without question. That year he was at Syracuse and he was more of a low post player. 13.5 points, 8.5 boards, block per contest, shot 31% from three, but he was taking more like 2.5 threes per game. At Oregon, he was taking 4+ threes per game. I really feel like they just sort of broke his game a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see his usage at Illinois because if he does become a little bit more of a low post player, it might not necessarily suit the Big Ten the best because there's a lot of big men in the Big Ten that are going to be able to just outsize him. He's 6'7", 220, but I do think that that is really the best role for him. So I'm very interested to see how Illinois is going to be able to utilize him. We did see Kyron Gibson decide that he is going to be transferring away from UT Arlington as well. So they lose Shondell Weaver. They also lose Mr. Gibson, who he was very productive for UT Arlington this last season. Came over from the junior college ranks, was able to put up 11 points, 4 assists, 1.2 steals, shot 36% from 3. UT Arlington actually had some pretty talented players this last season. They just weren't able to really put it together, and they just played at such a molasses slow pace that I think that it was very, very questionable what they were doing, but I do think that he is going to be a name that a lot of folks are going to be looking at in the transfer portal. I do think that there is something there. P.J. Hagerty was only able to play 6 games this last season over at TCU, was able to give the team 2.8 points per contest, was just all sorts of banged up. He has decided that he is going to be transferring to Tulsa, a Tulsa program that they're just pretty much overhauling everything that they did this last season. Eric Conkle, he's in year number 2 after he was coaching up Louisiana Tech, and I do think that Conkle is a good coach. It's just a really bad blend in general, but for Hagerty, he's a former top 200 recruit. He's someone that has a good skill set. At 6'3", he's able to give you some handles if you need him to. He's got a nice shot, so I do think that there is quite a bit of upside with him, so I do think that this is a step in the right direction for Tulsa, and call it what it is, it can't get a whole heck of a lot worse for Tulsa. I do think that there's going to be a lot of suitors for this guy, as you saw Deshaun Phillip decide that he is going to be entering into the transfer portal. With Deshaun Phillip, really loved what he was able to do at Maryland Eastern Shore this past season, as he's been a 3-year starter for them. 9.8 points, 1.3 steals, gave the team a 3-point shooting percentage right around 33.5%. And with Maryland Eastern Shore, they were one of the best teams in all of college basketball this last season at being able to generate turnovers. So very excited to see what happens there. You saw a pair of guys from Central Michigan decide that they're going to be entering into the transfer portal in Dylan Juergens, which it looks like he is going to be going down to the non-D1 level. Very easy for a handicap. All you need to notice is that you don't have Juergens at the D1 level anymore. Cross him off your list of guys that you need to evaluate and move on. He really wasn't much of a contributor last season with this team as well. And then Morislav Stoffel, he's on the transfer portal as well. A guy with versatility, and while he was at Hartford, was very productive. 2 years ago when Hartford made the NCAA tournament, at 10.5 points, shot 32% from threes, a 6'10", little bit of a combo player this last season. And Central Michigan was only able to give the team right around 4 points per contest, and just really a band of misfit pieces in general. It wasn't a great fit. And then we saw Sam Iamford in the news as they lose a guy, but they pick one up. The guy that they lose, that would be Jaron Riley, as he has decided that he is going to be heading on over to Northern Colorado. Good win for Northern Colorado, a team that they need to build up their defense as they lost Dalton Connect, who was their main scorer with 20 points per contest. But for Riley, he was able to get 13 starts this last season. Not a guy with a supreme amount of scoring, about 4.5 points per contest, but a career 39% three-point shooter at Samford. They actually teach you to play a little bit of defense, unlike at Northern Colorado. So that's all right, an upgrade for them. And then In return for losing Riley, Samford, they pick up Garrett X, who last season was an all-SWAC performer, was able to tear it up over at Alabama A&M. 12.8 points, 4 boards, right around 1.6 steals per contest, shot 40% from three-point range, has really been a four-year starter for Alabama A&M. He's got north of 100 starts under his belt. He has averaged between 12.8 and 14 points per contest each of the last three seasons. Being able to bring in a cog like this, a little bit undersized for the SoCon at 6 feet tall, and isn't necessarily the world's greatest facilitator, but is someone that's able to generate steals. He should be able to fit in very well with Bucky McMillan, so I do like this pickup. And then on the front of guys that have the possibility of coming back for the COVID year or not, we did see a significant one with Zach Fremantle deciding that he will be back at Xavier. He was all sorts of banged up this last season, but when he was out there on the floor, was a big impact guy for Xavier. 15 points, 8 boards, 3 assists, was able to pop threes at a 63% clip. Obviously, that was on a small amount of threes, but if you take a look at the career numbers, a 35% three-point shooter. This is very significant for Xavier. With Xavier, they've added a few guys in the transfer portal, so they should have a little bit more depth than they did a season ago, and I think that that's really the biggest thing for this team, just because you can tell that when Fremantle went down, they didn't necessarily have a lot of guys that they could utilize, but this is very big for Xavier, and I do expect Xavier, once again, in a Big East set, is going to be locked, loaded, and ready for bear with a lot of good teams that they're going to be one of the better teams once again. Can't call them the top team, but I do think that they're going to be very good once again. Hassan Ward is going to be back with Iowa State this season as well. Was a role player for Iowa State, didn't necessarily see a lot of playing time, but while he was at VCU, was averaging right around 5 rebounds per contest and 6.5 points per game. Those two seasons was a nice shot blocker, and for Iowa State, they just need some depth pieces in general. This should be able to give them a little bit of depth as well, and it does appear as though Chuck O'Bannon was playing this last year at TCU. He was able to give the team about 7.5 points per contest, relatively solid three-point shooter. He is going to be back over with that program as well, and we're keeping in tune with everything that's happening in college basketball right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. Try and make this the most successful and profitable college basketball season ever, and if you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at JNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, as per usual. Please just send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you are able to fire on whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. A big thanks to our good friend Eli Becker over at HXCBB for joining me in the last segment. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the year. Not just the regular season of college basketball, but the year. And I will come at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.